Writing Wrong Way. I'm your host, Dr. Jonathan Ball. Now, I got a question for you. What do Alien, the movie Alien, and the Avengers Infinity War movie have in common? Now, one thing that they do have in common that you may not realize is I'm going to talk about both of them right away in this podcast in the course of discussing Dan O'Bannon, the writer of Alien, and his book, which is all about a concept that Dan O'Bannon calls dynamic structure. I really do recommend Dan's book. So on one hand, I'm going to review his book in this discussion. It's something that many people ask me is what screenwriting books do I recommend? So I often will point people to one of two books, Blake Snyder's Save the Cat, which I think is a great book for beginners, or Dan O'Bannon's book, which is a bit more of useful for people who have some, experience under the belt. Partly because, as I said, noted in this video, the Dan O'Bannon goes through these other screenwriting systems. So Dan O'Bannon's book sort of summarizes quickly for you a bunch of other books. But also it has a really brilliant and simple idea at its core. This idea of dynamic structure and how you can use dynamic structure to not only structure a screen story, which of course is what O'Bannon is primarily going to talk about and what we'll talk about in this particular discussion here. When I kind of analyze O'Bannon and what he's discussing, what his concepts, and I kind of apply it, which in some ways I think it's best applied to movies like Alien, like Avengers Infinity War. I'm going to walk through both those examples in terms of how O'Bannon's ideas kind of explicate for us or help us understand what those movies are doing and why they work, and why Thanos in particular and the Alien in particular are brilliant movie villains, great story antagonists. I'm going to talk about all that stuff in the course of talking about this Dan O'Bannon's concepts. It's a bit of a book review, a bit of analysis of some films, and a very much a core conceptual framework that you can use to write a really powerful story. So without further ado, let's have a little bit of further ado. If you like this kind of discussion, go to strangeinc.ca and sign up to join my newsletter. I'll send you a free story, a cool little ghost story I wrote. I'll send you some writing tips on a regular basis. I'll send you sort of what I'm up to, what's coming out, what's going to come out. I'll send you some original draft work. You'll get to see some of my writing before anyone else gets to see it. And I'll recommend, cool books and films and other things like this to you. It's just a nice little, informal newsletter. It's a good way to keep in touch. You can reply to it and it goes right to me. I really would appreciate hearing from you, keeping in touch, getting you signed up at strangeinc.ca. Now, without further ado, let's talk about Dan O'Bannon's book and his concept of a dynamic structure. Talk a bit about Dan O'Bannon's guide to screenplay structure. So this is one of many books on screenwriting that focuses less on the screenplay form specifically. So I can tell you how to format a script, for example, but more sort of on the story form, narrative form, narrative structure, insofar as it best adapts or connects to the film medium. Specifically, O'Bannon is writing about feature films, not so much television, although some of it could adapt to television. And again, he's talking about feature length films more than he is talking about short films. And the book has many strengths and weaknesses. One of the great strengths of this book, and one reason I assign this book often in classes, is because one of the things that O'Bannon does early on is, in order to distinguish his structural storytelling approach from others, he reiterates many others in their kind of nutshell version. So he talks in summary about Aristotle. He talks in summary about Sid Field. He talks in summary about Robert McKee and so on. So you don't get the full scope of those other versions of story structure, but he does kind of go through them in a nutshell. So you get a bit of a taste of some of the other books you might want to go out and look at more fully. And you do that en route to sort of O'Bannon deciding what he thinks is most important about screenwriting. It also is a book that suffers from the fact that O'Bannon died before he could finish it. So it was finished by a student of O'Bannon's, Matt Lohr. And it has, as I say, weaknesses as a result of that. It's not, Lohr is quite good, O'Bannon is quite good. Together, it's pretty seamlessly done, but ironically, as a book, it is maybe less well-developed, and as I say, in some respects, unfinished or completed from notes than other screenwriting programs. A lot of screenwriting books that you'll find, particularly books like McKee's, are designed sort of as textbooks for seminar approaches. This is, of course, what Ben probably would have done had he lived. And often they're designed on the back of seminars. So often what you'll find is these books tend to be very well developed insofar as explicating the particular systems, story systems that they concern. Because often what these people have done is taught their systems for years, then wrote a book, and then they continue to teach their systems, using the book. O'Bannon wasn't really doing that, so I think his system is a little harder to grasp, even though, you're reading a whole book that is supposedly explaining it. And as I say, he spends a lot of time talking about other things. In a kind of ironic way, although this book is fundamentally concerned with structure, as opposed to style, as opposed to the words on the page, he's trying to get at the heart of narrative structure and storytelling for the big screen. But the book itself is not particularly well structured, and even, some ways not particularly well written. But ironically, and despite that, I would say this is maybe the best book on screenwriting, because it does cut to the heart of a few things that I don't see as well developed in other story systems or other screenwriting instruction books and so on. It says it right in the title, it's Dan O'Bannon's Guide to Screenplay Structure. And although many books, many authors purporting to tell you about screenplay structure do in fact discuss structure in some detail, O'Bannon, I think, has the best approach to it and has the most clear and useful and deep insights into storytelling. He has a few core insights that are run through the book. I don't know if any of them are fully or clearly explained at any one point in the book necessarily. That's maybe my complaint about this book. But if you take a look at this book closely and read it, a couple times with this idea in mind, you'll see that O'Bannon has hit on some really clear, sensible concepts that he is maybe best expressing compared to how other people discuss some of the same things. One of the core things that O'Bannon points out, and this is something that other screenwriting gurus will point out to you, McKee does say this as well, but when McKee says that, I don't know if you can believe it, but McKee will say, you don't want to be following the rules in the sense that there aren't rules. There's, things you have to do and so on and so forth. McKee will talk, he'll differentiate, rules from principles. But you really do get the sense reading McKee, I think, that it's a semantic difference, and McKee does have in his heart a set of rules that he wants you to follow. That's, you know, maybe unfair, and it is, again, opposite of what McKee is actually saying, but I do think that's the impression people get reading McKee. O'Bannon is a much messier writer, and he has a much messier approach to screenwriting, which I think has his values. My biggest complaint about screenwriting systems is that they're too systematic, and you get into this paint-by-numbers approach. Blake Snyder does this, for example. Blake Snyder has a very paint-by-numbers approach, and it does work. You know, I'll point out that Snyder's approach works. So you could do worse than go buy a copy of Save the Cat and follow it. It will work. But you won't create something truly impressive following that approach. You'll create something that works. And something that works has great value. You can sit on a chair that has, you know, three legs, right? But once you get that fourth leg in there, and once you get a chair that's ornately constructed in a beautiful fashion, we're sort of in another realm. And now we're in the difference between, you know, a $10 chair and a $10,000 chair, right? You can sit on a mole, but there's a whole different market out there for the high-end chair versus the workers, you know, it'll work for you chair. And you can dedicate your life to making one or the other. And I think it, you're going to start just figuring out what a chair is. And some people have the ambition to just be churning out chairs. But if you want to get to the point where you're constructing something that has a bit more value artistically, or even just, you know, more value in the sense of you could sell it for more money, you really need to get beyond the rules and beyond the basics of, say, the Snyder approach. And other people like McKee help you with that. But even so, I would argue O'Bannon has a bit of a looser approach that I think cuts to the heart of what really matters in a story, particularly in a screen story, you know, for a feature film. And there are a few key insights. So that is one key insight that, you know, as O'Bannon puts it, you want to master the rules, not become their slave, right? You don't want to just be following orders that, you know, some screenwriting guru has given you. You want to really grasp what is at the heart or underlying these rules. That is a key insight that other people pay lip service to, but I would say O'Bannon is really spending a lot of time trying to show you that there is a value to doing things, not necessarily the way that everyone else does them, but in sort of organically seeing what works best for the story. You know, grab what works best for the story out of, you know, the various quote unquote rules and systems and approaches and tips that you've been handed by different screenwriting people, as opposed to trying to fit them inside of a core system. Now, in terms of the actual system, Bannon's core insight and the thing that he builds everything around is what he calls dynamic structure. So Bannon says, yes, stories have structure, screenplays have structure. Screenplay is structure, is something you hear in other screenwriting books. Bannon, I think, rightly agrees with this core concept that the most important job of the screenwriter and the most important thing you can do as a writer of stories is to be pinning down the structure of that story, you know, worrying at some later point about the precise words, you know, people are going to say that come out of their mouths, or the precise way you're going to describe some object or whatever. But fundamentally getting at the heart of what is the structure of that story. And O'Bannon has, I think, the key insight that, to me, all other insights must follow, which is, he calls it dynamic structure. And as he defines it, dynamic structure is my term for stories that are built around the progressive escalation of a conflict. And I think I would argue that this is the heart of all storytelling, is you've got a conflict that is driving the story, and then you're progressively escalating the conflict. My contention, and I think O'Bannon would agree with me, my contention is that you could dispense with everything else. You can even dispense with cause and effect relationships. You can even dispense with characters that carry over from scene to scene. And a character, somebody like David Lynch will show us this. If you look at a surrealistic film that by Buñuel or by David Lynch or what, you know, some highly experimental thing that still works, what you'll see in those really far out experimentalist stories that still work is they've grasped this fundamental idea that if you have a dynamic structure, if you have the progressively escalating conflict, and that happens, you can actually alter and dispense with everything else in the story. David Lynch has done this, proven this beautifully time and time again in mainstream crossovers. You know, Lynch will construct a film that works gorgeously as a film. You know, it grabs you from the start, it pulls you all the way to the end. It's fascinating every moment that goes past. You can't look away. And yet, if you were to reiterate what happened afterwards, it makes absolutely no sense. Now, in fact, if you dig down deep, often Lynch has a plot that does make sense. It's just you might be hard pressed to find it. Because what he's focusing on is dynamic structure. He's focusing on progressively escalating a conflict, and he's doing that to the expense of all other things. So David Lynch doesn't even care so much if you know what's happening in any scene. He doesn't care if you know what characters are. He'll change the character. He'll change the actor from time to time. Buñuel does this in one movie. He just changes the actor from scene to scene. It's the same character, but he switches the actors. And it can still work because the conflict is progressing. You know, now more normatively, of course, we're not doing these wild and crazy things. You know, we have, say, the same actor throughout the movie playing the same character. We have, you know, one scene following the other in a plot that makes sense in a more normal film. But ironically, that stuff's not important. If that stuff all works, you know, if you have a plot that makes perfect sense, it doesn't matter if the conflict isn't progressively escalating. The viewer would rather have the plot make no sense and the conflict progressively escalate. That's what you sort of realize. If you see a lot of films, you'll see things that actually should work and don't, because that structure of dynamic escalation is not working. And vice versa, you'll see films that, you know, you don't even know why you like them. You could say later that you don't like them, but in fact, you're enraptured the whole time watching them, because fundamentally this plot escalation is occurring and is pulling you through. So O'Bannon is really onto something here with this idea of dynamic conflict or dynamic structure and this progressive escalation of a conflict. The other thing that I think he's fundamentally onto, and what I would argue is one of the key insights of this approach, and something that I would say a lot of other people don't get right, that O'Bannon has sort of locked into in a sensible fashion, is that this conflict is dynamic in the sense of you have these sort of warring antagonists. So many other systems, this is something that Matt Lohr points out in his afterword here. O'Bannon, I'm going to quote from that conclusion. Dan was the first screenwriting structure I came across who was astute enough to define conflict not as protagonist versus obstacles. So he's not defining in terms of, you know, the protagonist wants something and then there's things getting in the way of them getting it, but it says antagonist in opposition. And I think this is a core insight. And you can make a story work in both ways, but I would say that what O'Bannon has kind of hit on, and you especially see this in the movie Alien, is he's hit on this idea that what works best in a movie, especially, is if you have antagonists who are in opposition. as opposed to, you know, focusing on the protagonist, you know, as opposed to focusing on the hero who's trying to accomplish something and then all these things are getting in their way. Instead, focus on the idea that we have two people locked in opposition and that, you know, one is forcing the other to change and vice versa. And it's, and now you're looking at a movie and you're thinking of storytelling and you're constructing your narrative by both taking into account the hero and the villain and how they both are trying to accomplish something. And they're both working towards goals and they're coming into conflict and they're both forcing each other to change. What you get when you think in that way, it's a different way of thinking. But if you really push through that way of thinking, what you end up with is not only a hero that has more dimension and a hero that has, you know, more to do, more interesting developments, because they really have a strong and powerful, more dynamic story that they're moving through, but you get a villain who is much more interesting and who has much more dimension and who has a real interesting, fascinating approach. You know, the alien has such an enduring power. And it's not just because the alien is frightening. I think this is a key mistake people make when they look at the movie Alien and they look at that franchise and they think, well, and this is a key mistake even that later films in the franchise make, is they look at the alien and they think, oh, what's, you know, enduring about the alien is how frightening it is. It's so disturbing in these different levels. I don't think that's what's truly enduring about the alien. What's enduring about the alien in that first movie is the fact that you can understand the film from and what's happening from the alien's point of view. The alien is trying to achieve something. And the alien is making moves that make sense for what it's trying to achieve. It's not just a malicious monster who can't be comprehended. And it is that on one level. You know, it is an alien, right? But there's a way in which it represents a kind of a pure biology and a drive to survive. And you can really understand what the alien is doing in those terms. It wants to survive and reproduce, survive and reproduce. It's a mother figure in a certain weird way. And it's not sympathetic, but there's a level at which it is comprehensible on that base biological need level, and what it's doing makes sense. And consequently, it must be reckoned with in a way that I think is very different from how you might reckon with, you know, an evil force like Cthulhu or something that just has a malicious will. The other hero, you know, villain set that I think about, and the film that I think that best expresses this kind of dynamic conflict, this dynamic structure that O'Bannon talks about, is a film in terms of more recent films, is the Avengers Infinity War film. Now I've just blanked on the name of that movie, but the first, you know, of those films with Thanos, where Thanos is attempting to destroy, you know, get the Infinity Stones and destroy half of the universe. I'm just going to make sure I'm saying the right. Yeah, Infinity War, I was right. So Avengers Infinity War. What's, I think, most interesting about that film and what makes it work is that if you look at Thanos as a figure, and if you look at what he is trying to accomplish, this horrifying thing of ending, you know, killing half of the things in the universe, right? He wants to get these, he has a goal, right? Thanos has a goal. He is in many ways the protagonist of that film. He's not a hero, right? The Avengers, of course, are the heroes, you know, as a unit, the Avengers are the hero of the film. Thanos is this antagonist villain, right? With this
horrifying goal to end half of the life in the universe. He's trying to get these stones to, you know, the Infinity Stones to complete the Infinity Gauntlet so he can just snap his fingers and complete the thing that he's heretofore been trying to do piecemeal. You know, Thanos has been traveling across the universe, you know, going to world, killing half of the population of that world. Thanos cannot see an end to his struggle. You know, he has this vision, this thing, his goal he's trying to accomplish, but how is he going to accomplish it? You know, he's doing the best he can, but the only real way to do it is to get the Infinity Gauntlet, snap his fingers, accomplish it all at once. There's different moments in the movie where he discusses this goal and why he's doing it. And I think what's fascinating about that film and where that character really shines and has power and endurance as a character is that if you actually listen to Thanos, it makes perfect sense. Everything he's saying makes perfect sense and is justifiable and right from his point of view. Now, of course, there's another way of looking at it, which makes it absolutely seem like a nightmare of horror. But if you just flip, if you just put a couple things aside, you put some of your ethical, you know, points of view aside and so on, Thanos is not wrong. He may not be right. He may not be the most right, but he's not wrong in the sense that he has a logic. There's a logic to what he's doing. It is in some ways an alien logic. It depends. Accepting his argument forces you, means you have to accept certain premises that he has. He has a sort of post-human premise, right? That there is fundamentally nothing valuable about life. You would have to accept that premise to then accept Thanos and his argumentation as valid and correct. But if you did accept that premise, as Thanos, of course, is doing, then everything he's building on that premise makes sense. So I'm not arguing that Thanos is the epitome of ethics. I'm just saying that Thanos has a goal. It's a comprehensible goal. There is a logical development to how he is acting in service of that goal. And the fact that he's got a logic and he has a set of premises and they're tempting makes him this fascinating and interesting figure for these Avengers and their, you know, cohort to come in conflict with. And they have to sort of dynamically oppose him, and they have to also thematically oppose his ideas. But it's hard because there's a level at which it's possible that he's right. So it's very different from the alien. It's almost the opposite of the alien. Instead of this biological drive that is just, you know, moving like life itself, the alien, in some weird way, although it's an agent of death, the alien represents this sort of force of life itself that will just keep going and is going to, you know, just biological need and struggle to reproduce, like survive and reproduce, survive and reproduce. The alien is this perfect weapon in a weird way, though it symbolizes life itself as a weapon. You know, the kind of chaos and violence of life at its core, beyond thought, you know, divorced from any level of philosophy. Whereas Thanos is the opposite. Thanos is almost like a pure philosophy, a pure, you know, world of idea. You know, here is the idea that makes the most sense. If you divorce yourself from biology and from the value of life, the need to reproduce, if you embrace instead a death wish, or you are willing at least to entertain that death is as good as life, and there's nothing inherently valuable about that struggle, And if you're willing to close down the need, that biological need, or at least dismiss it, if you're just going to work in the world of ideas, you know, it's easy to see that Thanos would make sense in that world. Philosophically, Thanos is correct, except that he's, you know, ignoring the various ethical ramifications or just biological realities that make his position horrifying and untenable. But story-wise, you've got the same structure. You've got this dynamic structure where and that dynamic structure really leads you into interesting spaces. In Infinity War, it leads you to this fascinating ending, one of the riskier endings of that I've seen in the cinema. Unfortunately, Endgame is a total structural flop and fundamentally undoes everything good about Infinity War in terms of like narrative structure and, you know, artistic progression. But if you just kind of isolate Infinity War and look at like the start and end of that film and how things progress, and you look at the power of that film for the viewer, you know, minus, you know, the kind of handful of things that, you know, don't work well, like, you know, the kind of interminable getting the team together that these superhero movies always seem to do. They'll get a team together for an hour and then next film they'll get the team together again, even though you know who the team is. Nevertheless, dynamically, that structure is so compelling, and it has so much thematic heft because you have these antagonists in opposition in exactly the way that O'Bannon is talking about, and then he himself builds into a film like Alien. There are a lot of other things that you can do and consider and be aware of and work into a film. But if you can get that dynamic structure, that progressive escalation of a conflict through antagonists and opposition, 90% of your film will rise out of that or pay attention and just kind of organically, if you can lock that dynamic structure and these antagonists and opposition and develop that core of the idea and then ladder it into this progressive escalation, you know, put one scene after the other in terms of that progressive escalation, and keep the need to progressively escalate at the forefront of your mind, you know. So even if you don't have an idea for a scene yet, put a placeholder where we know that like this element has to progress, and then, you know, figure out what the scene's going to be later. It's a powerful way to build a story. It offers a great organic approach. So you're building a story that feels like it is developing in a way that is unique and very much in line with the heart of that story, as opposed to how many other screenwriting gurus might have you do, which is take a skeletal framework and impose it on an idea. That approach can work to give you something workable, but it'll never give you something truly compelling and fascinating. It'll never give you a masterwork. It'll never give you There Will Be Blood or Alien or even Infinity War. You know, to get into that other space where now we are working in the realm of ideas that, you know, films, stories that have a uniqueness to them and are their own thing in many respects. We need to be thinking in terms of dynamic structure, I would argue. Although it is less defined a more difficult thing to think through. I think what O'Bannon has done here is really given us a bit of a skeleton key for how we can unlock that next level of screen artistry.